Hey, good evening, True Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NOVEM Radio Network. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. A bunch of bulletins today. The most recent one came in just about 10 minutes ago. Ted Haggard is still heterosexual. Damn. Sam Fox was appointed our ambassador to Belgium today. Did you know that? You know who Sam Fox is, of course. He was the guy who contributed, $50,000. Was it 50? I think it was 50. That's what we know about. To that crappy right-wing, lying, America-hating, military-disrespecting organization, Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, remember, during the 2004 election? And that whorish group of cowards was responsible for the brutal and utterly false attack ads that smeared Senator Kerry and some of his crewmates during the 2004 election. Now, in response to Bush nominating this wealthy pig, 11 of Kerry's crewmates sent the Foreign Relations Committee, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, a letter saying, quote, "Those who finance smears and lies of combat veterans don't deserve to represent America on the world stage," end quote. So that was 8 days ago? Not long ago. As a result of that, Bush withdrew Fox's nomination when it became clear he wouldn't get past the committee. He just pulled it back. But Bush, like Fox, is a cowardly son of a bitch. He avoided military service. He's a sneak. He's a fraud. And he likes to stick his finger in the eye of the American public. Bush does. You know that just from watching this creep for the past 6 years. So on the very day that the Democratic National Committee issued a report that lays out the Bush administration's ongoing, consistent, never-ending pattern of putting partisanship ahead of good government. In other words, putting their cronies in positions and their political commissars into regulatory agencies to make sure everybody stays in line. On the very day, Bush did it again, today. Bush put his thumb into the eye of the American people, and he used a recess appointment to install this Republican thug, Sam Fox, as ambassador to Belgium. See, he really, really, really is a coward, isn't he, Bush? I mean, my God, he just defines a coward. So everybody leaves town, Senate's in recess, and he slips him in. Now, what does that mean? It means that this Fox guy can stay in, as the ambassador to Belgium. Ooh, that's an important post. Until Bush's term is over. You see how that works? Bush has as much respect for the legislative branch of government, for the advice and consent role of the Senate, as he does for the U.S. Constitution. And you know what he said about that. The DNC issued a statement that says the following, quote, "Faced with serious and principled objections over a nominee who funded some of the ugliest attack ads in a generation, President Bush had a choice between honoring the veterans who have served this country by distancing himself from these despicable ads or rewarding the donors who served his political goals. Sadly, President Bush once again put the interests of his party ahead of the American people by circumventing the Senate in a clear abuse of his power." Sadly? Come on, DNC. This is typically. And then it goes on to say, quote, "Now that President Bush has made his position clear, smooth-talking Mitt Romney, who has already taken $100,000 from Mr. Fox, has an obligation to tell the American people whether he supports the president's abuse of power, or if he, Mitt Romney, agrees that the sort of attack ad Sam Fox is notorious for have no place in American politics," end quote. These people are amazing, aren't they? Just, they care not a whit, these Republicans. They don't give a damn about you and me, about the American public, about our country, about our military. Bush appoints a thug like this, who went after an honest-to-God veteran. I don't care whether you support the war in Vietnam or not. I don't care whether you support a Kerry or not. None of that is material. Here's the only thing that's material. Kerry was in combat in Vietnam. Was it a bad war? Yes. Should we not have been there? Absolutely we should not have been there. But he was there. And he went there because his country sent him there. The cowards, six deferment Cheney and Hyde in Alabama Bush, And I don't know about Fox. I don't give a damn if he was airborne. He is still a coward. These guys stay home, crap all over the military, refuse to fund the Veterans Administration. The bill that Bush is going to veto because it comes from the Democrats, that has several billions in it. That's the pork these creeps on television been talking. Oh, spinach research, don't forget that. Oh, okay. Spinach research. Billions in there for the VA. What is it? $100 million, $200 million to clean up Walter Reed. These people hate the military. Don't you folks understand that? Well, I know people listen to this program on a regular basis understand that. Republicans hate the military. They hate them. What they want is a private army. Hessians. They want to outsource. They want mercenaries. They want something equivalent to the French Foreign Legion. No, never mind. That wasn't a mercenary force. They want to destroy everything in this country that might be good or decent or have honor or tradition. Why do people continue to send Republicans to office? Is it because the people who vote for Republicans are just as ugly and venal and warped? Yeah. So Sam Fox gets his, he gets to be ambassador to Belgium. You know, for a rich man, that's a good deal. He'll be able to go to balls and parties and hang out in Europe and pretend like his ass matters. Every time something like that comes up, I just, for a moment, I see red, and then I realize that's blood sloshing around inside my own eyeballs, and that's not really a good thing to do. Oh, my God. Who sent me this? One of our correspondents. Was this... damn it, who sent this to me? I got it right before the program, too. Oh, yeah, it was Mike. Mike in Minnesota, I think. He writes, well, according to Torquemada, Bush's Tejano, Alberto Gonzalez, if captives aren't prisoners of war, then the Geneva Convention doesn't apply. After all, surmised El Diablo Alberto, in the context of Gitmo Bay, the Geneva Convention is antiquated, out of date. So why then did Iran, a country relegated for eternity by our very own chucklenuts to spin aimlessly on the axis of evil, why then did Iran, a nation who surpasses even Saudi Arabia in exporting terror, why then did Iran adhere to the provisions of the Geneva Convention where it concerns its treatment of the British captives? Isn't it true that diplomacy with a nation such as this is futile? Or, alas, could it be that George W. is wrong once again? It might actually be amusing if his being wrong didn't result in so much destruction. And then Michael sent me the entire Geneva Conventions. Good God. Entered into force 21 October 1950. Adopted on 12 August 1949, yada, yada, yada. The only thing I could, and I don't know if this even applies anymore, Mike, or anybody else, in the age, in the electronic age, age of instant communications, I read someplace that displaying captives is not allowed by the Geneva Conventions. I don't know. These folks, these British sailors, were on television, what, seemed like every night. Well, it was the same video, but... So I don't know if that still holds, although they seem to be having a pretty damn good time, didn't they? I'm not trying to be flip here. When you're, you know, captured by someone whom you've been told not to trust, someone whom your country's chief ally says is part of the axis of evil, you probably have a right to behave any way you want to just to make sure your ass gets out of there. But having said that, they all seem like they were having an okay time, didn't they? But there, he did it, didn't he? Ahmadinejad, that little rat bastard, he freed them.
To the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
The city got to get away. All this fussing and fighting, man, you know I sure can't stay.
He's such a liar. So how do we deal with Iran? Well, you know how we deal with Iran, but did you know this? And this has been on my stack here since Sunday. It's from the French news agency. U.S. warplanes have violated Iranian airspace in the southwestern oil-rich province of Khuzestan. That's according to El Aman Arabic language news satellite channel. According to a military source there, quote, two aircraft trespassed into Iranian airspace northwest of Abadan before flying southwest into Iraq. The planes left white vapor trails, attracting the local people's attention. The incident happened close to Iran's border with Iraq, where the U.S. and British military are deployed in force. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, you know, kind of poking the bear's eye, you know, stick your finger. But what about this? This is more than poking the bear's eye. This is from ABC News, a secret war against Iran. A Pakistani tribal militant group responsible for a series of deadly guerrilla raids inside Iran has been secretly encouraged and advised by American officials for the past 2 years. That's according to U.S. and Pakistani intelligence sources. The group called Jundullah is made up of members of the Baluchi tribe and operates out of the Baluchistan province in Pakistan, just across the border from Iran. It has taken responsibility for the deaths and kidnappings of more than a dozen Iranian soldiers and officials. U.S. officials say the U.S. relationship with Jundullah is arranged so that the U.S. provides no funding to the group, because that would require an official presidential order as well as congressional oversight. And God knows we don't do that. Tribal sources tell ABC News that money from this organization is funneled through Iranian exiles who have connections with European and Gulf states. Jundullah has produced its own videos showing Iranian soldiers and border guards it captured and brought back to Pakistan. It goes on, blah, 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 blah. Last month, Iranian state television broadcast what it said were confessions by those responsible for a February attack on a bus that killed 11 members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And then I like this. a CIA spokesperson said the account of alleged CIA action in all this is false, and reiterated that the U.S. provides no funding for the Jundullah group. Pakistani government sources say the secret campaign against Iran by Jundullah was on the agenda when Vice President Dick Cheney met with Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf in February. A senior U.S. government official said groups such as Jundullah have been helpful in tracking al-Qaeda figures, and it was appropriate for the U.S. to deal with such groups in that context. The fact that the CIA or anybody connected with the Bush crime family says they are not funding this organization just makes me want to scream in hysterical laughter. Some former CIA officers say the real arrangement that's going on here between the Bush crime family and this group of thugs, I guess, is reminiscent of how the Reagan government under Oliver North used proxy armies funded by other countries, including Saudi Arabia, to destabilize the government of Nicaragua in the 1980s. Now, in all fairness, let us also throw in Israel. Israel was involved in training in Honduras the Contras. So it wasn't just Saudi Arabia. Israel had its hand in this in the 80s also. And, of course, If you can sort any truth out of what happened in the so-called Iran-Contra, Israel served as a bridge between the Iranian arms merchant Ghorbanifar and the psychopathic ex-Marine, and he is ex-Oliver North. Isn't it convenient? I wonder why ABC News left that out, that funded by other countries, well, they did make countries plural, including Saudi. Why didn't they say including Saudi Arabia and Israel? I mean, why not? And the UK if they wanted to, but you never, and just you never see it, do you? Well, that's what we're doing. See, Ahmadinejad has the absolute temerity to release these sailors. He does. I mean, how dare he do that? He was supposed to hold on to them. This was supposed to be weeks and weeks and weeks of threats and counter-threats, finally capped off with some Gulf of Tonkin incident where the United States and the Israeli Air Forces could go in and nuke the bastards. And Ahmadinejad? He didn't follow the script, did he?
Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Oh, don't choke on your coffee just as you open up the microphone there, Malloy. 25 before the hour. Mike in St. Paul also wrote and said, call me crazy, but I think that maybe, just maybe, Nancy Pelosi's visit to Syria may have had something to do with the release of the British soldiers from Iran. You know, you never know, but I'll tell you what. The news commentators, such as they are in this country, and once again, I'm focused on Suzanne Melveaux and some other folks on MSNBC. I have to give Tweety Bird credit tonight because he had some Republican House member on who, I don't know, just was, she was driving me crazy. And I think she finally got to Tweety Bird. And he pointed out that the Republicans had a delegation go to Syria just, this week or last week and met with Assad. And see, nobody talks about that, you know, other than a few. Chris Matthews brought it up. But there's Nancy Pelosi, who does what she's damn well entitled to do. Since we don't have a Secretary of State, we have this bizarre shoe lady who runs around the Middle East, I don't know, smiling and shaking hands and pretending like she is, a Secretary of State. Well, say hello to the new Secretary of State, at least temporarily, Nancy Pelosi. As CBS and the Associated Press put it, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi met Syrian President Bashar Assad today for talks, criticized by the White House as undermining American efforts to isolate the hardline Arab country. What is she doing? She said the delegation gave the Syrian leader a message from Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, whose essence was that Israel was ready to hold peace talks with Syria. None of that! Peace? Oh, no! She didn't say more about the message, but Israel had previously made such talks conditional on Syria's cutting off its support for hardline Palestinian groups and Hezbollah. Pelosi said, quote, "We were very pleased with the assurances we received from the president that he was ready to resume the peace process." I guess that would be President Assad. Pelosi said he's ready to engage in negotiations for peace with Israel. Now, that may or may not be true. Nothing in the Middle East, i.e., Israel, Syria, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Israel, Egypt, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Kuwait, Jordan, Jordan, Syria. Nothing is ever as it seems. Well, never say never. She said, Pelosi said that her delegation conveyed to Assad, quote, "the importance of Syria's role with Hamas in promoting peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis," and, quote, she did not reveal how Assad responded to that message. The California Democrat and accompanying members of Congress began their day by holding separate talks with Foreign Minister Walid al-Mualim and Vice President Farouk al-Sharaa, and then met Assad, who hosted them for lunch after their talks. And then this is the part that I like. I don't know why I like this. Pelosi then went for a stroll in the old city district of Damascus. Do you know how old the old city? We haven't been there, but we're going to go there someday. Do you know how old it is? What, 5,000-6,000 years old? She went there and strolled around where she mingled with Syrians in a market, wearing a flag. And I bet she didn't have a company of soldiers around her either and attack gunships hovering in the sky like McCain. Of course, McCain's in a... Well, no, McCain's not in a war zone. He says it's just like that freak that went with him, Mike Pence from Indiana, said just like a stroll through some downtown Indianapolis market on a spring day. Oh, these people are sick. Pelosi mingled with Syrians. She wore a flowered headscarf and a black abaya robe. She visited the 8th century Umayyad Mosque. She made the sign of the cross in front of an elaborate tomb, which is said to contain the head of John the Baptist. Ooh, don't you love religion? About 10% of Syria's 18 million people are Christian.
Let's see, 10% of 18 million, that'd be almost 2 million people. Blow them up!
At the nearby outdoor Bazaria Market, Syrians crowded around, offering her dried figs and nuts and chatting with her. She bought some coconut sweets and looked at jewelry and carpets. On Tuesday night, Pelosi met Syrian human rights activists, businessmen, and religious leaders at the U.S. ambassador's residence, which has been empty for, what, 2 years? Syrian's foreign minister was quoted today as saying that Pelosi and other members of Congress were welcome in Syria. He said, better late than never. He said the visits were taking place because Americans and Europeans had realized that their policy of trying to isolate Syria had failed. Well, yeah, how do you isolate a country unless it's an absolute failed state like, oh, Nigeria? And the only reason, and yes, it is a failed state. What's another one? Zimbabwe. There's a failed state. Iraq. There's another one. How do you isolate countries that are not failed states? Well, you don't. Unless you're playing with a third of a deck the way Bush does, and you're a madman as Cheney is, or you're a murderous son of a bitch like Kissinger was. But other than that, and that's not the majority of people in the world. It really isn't. So isolating Syria is off the table. It always has been. My God, the Christians tried to isolate Syria 2,000 years ago. And what do? They cut off the head of John the Baptist. The Syrian ambassador to Washington was quoted as saying Syria was, quote, wary of the sudden U.S. openness and would respond cautiously. He went on to say Syria will take a step forward every time the Americans take one. Now, what was it? Do you blame him? Oh, my God. If I had to negotiate with the Bush crime family, I wouldn't. I don't know. I guess I would just kill myself. If I were the head, a head of state, and especially if I were the head of a state that had oil, and especially if I were head of a state that had oil and I might be a Muslim, and if I was the head of a state that had oil and I was Muslim and I just didn't bow down and suck Dick Cheney's toes every time he walked, I would probably go kill myself. So there's Nancy Pelosi doing what she should do. She said that during her meetings with the leaders in Damascus, she would also raise raise for discussion Syria's roles in Iraq and Lebanon and that country's support for the Hezbollah militant group. Pelosi said, "We have no illusions, but we have great hope." Earlier, she had met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank city of Ramallah. A couple of things to note here. Republicans met with him, too, but nothing was said by the right-wing blogs about this. They went after Pelosi and attacked her. The other thing has to do with the comment about Syrian people crowding around her in the marketplace. Where were the soldiers and helicopter gunships that McCain had to have to protect him? You see, this shows the complete and utter lies of our government regarding other countries' hatred toward us. They may hate our government, but who doesn't? You go, Nancy. Oh, and of course, Bush got his 3 cents worth in. He condemned Pelosi's trip to Damascus. Bush told reporters in Washington today that Pelosi's trip could undermine U.S. foreign policy. Well, what is U.S. foreign policy where it concerns anything in the Middle East? What's U.S. foreign policy where it concerns the Israeli-Palestinian bloodbath? Ignore it. What's U.S. policy where it concerns the refugees from Iraq that have just swarmed into and are flooding Jordan? Ignore it. What is the Bush crime family's reaction to the fact that Syria and Lebanon are trying to do something? God only knows what. Ignore it. So, what is U.S. foreign policy that Nancy Pelosi might undermine?
Bush also reiterated charges that Syria is facilitating the movement of foreign fighters into Iraq and failing to rein in Hamas and Hezbollah. Of course, last time I checked, wasn't Hamas elected to be the legal representative of the Palestinian people? Oh, no! Pelosi, I don't know how you say her name, whose visit is seen as part of an attempt to sway Bush administration policy on Iran and Iraq and the whole Middle East, is probably going to go nowhere.
The hour. Jan in New York City writes, Mike, French TV showed Pelosi on television today and yesterday. She looked very presidential and was treated as such. They did not show any bodyguards. Bush had 10,000 in Chile and spoke of her with great respect. Jan in New York City. Reggie at TVNewsLies.org sent this. Associated Press and the Jerusalem Post are now reporting that Damascus played a key role in the release of those sailors. Syria's information minister and foreign minister said today that Damascus had played a role in resolving the standoff with the 15 British sailors. Syria had been asked, I wonder by who, probably Pelosi, had been asked to, quote, help positively in the issue of British sailors, end quote. The The minister said, quote, Syrian efforts and the Iranian willingness culminated with the release of the British sailors, end quote. The foreign minister of Syria also told reporters that, quote, Syria exercised a sort of quiet diplomacy to solve this problem and encourage dialogue between the two parties, referring to Britain and Iran, end quote. So, okay, Mike, maybe you're right. Maybe Pelosi had quite a bit to do. Now, I know that Tom Lantos went with her. Tom Lantos is the only member of Congress who is an actual Holocaust survivor. I'm not sure who else was with Lantos and Pelosi, but obviously they're over there undermining and destabilizing Bush's wonderful, glorious, richly, think of a word, Mike, not a cuss word, whatever, foreign policy. John in Manhattan, Kansas writes,
Gee, no, Mrs. Cleaver, it's those Democrats who are trying to ruin the military.
President Eddie Haskell? Oh, my God. Let's do a phone call real quick here before the break. Ash is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Ash.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, thank you. Just wanted to make a comment off the subject we're talking about. Our good old President Bush keeps saying that Ahmadinejad is a threat to the country.
Right.
Due to the fact that he talks about getting Israel wiped off the map. Just wanted to say, whatever happened to that country that used to be called Palestine that got wiped off the map? How come nobody ever says anything about that?
Because you're not allowed to say anything about that in the United States of America.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And another question. If Hitler killed all the Jews, why don't they go in Germany? Why don't they give him a piece of Germany? Why is it in the Middle East? You know, I got nothing against Jews, and I got, you know, I'm Persian myself. I was born in Iran.
Uh-huh.
Personally, I don't like the government right now. They're just ruining the country, giving us bad.
Sure. Well, what are you asking me? Why didn't the Jews settle in Germany?
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to give them a piece of land, why was in Germany? A piece of Germany. Why not a piece of the U.S.? Why not?
Well, maybe because the memories there sucked. But also, you know, rightly or wrongly, the Jewish claim, and I don't, I think the Jewish people do have a claim to settle in the Middle East. That's their historic home. That's where they came from. Just like Persians came from Persia, the Jews came from that particular. The Hebrews, the Israelites, came from that part of the world. What I don't like is their policy of saying we're the only ones that can be here. They insist on incorporating into their constitution the right of return. Any Jew worldwide can go to live in Israel, no problem. But Palestinians cannot. So I don't have a problem with where they picked. I mean, if Native Americans in this country were to ever decide to take their country back, what they consider to be their country, what? Are the white people going to say, no, you can't do it, or what's your claim? The Native Americans to say, what's our claim? Yeah, this is where we're from!
Yeah, you have a point.
You know, the official Israeli policy is... is the right of return. I don't mean every Jew signs on to this, denying the Palestinians the right to return. There is the peace movement, one of the many peace movements in Israel, conducted by Israeli Jews who want to see peace, who want to see honest peace, support the idea of a secular state. The reason the Palestinians or Muslims cannot enjoy the right of return is because within, 10 minutes, it would no longer be a Jewish state. And don't forget, this is a religious country. It is a Jewish state of Israel. It's not the Democratic Republic of Israel. It's kind of like Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Islamic Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. This is the Jewish democracy, whatever you want to call it, of Israel. So a lot of people in Israel, Israeli Jews, would love to see, and I mean this, because they understand what it takes to bring about peace.
Yeah, I'm sure Muslims think the same way out there.
Say it again?
I'm sure the Muslims out there think the same way.
Right. Well, you know, for Muslim, for Muslims and Jews to be at each other like this, especially Muslims who are Arabic and Jews who are either Sephardic or Ashkenazi, makes no difference. For these people to be at each other's throat, this is why I hate to talk about it, because they're sons of Abraham, sons and daughters of Abraham. They're the same tribe.
Yeah.
This is like Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland, only much worse. This is one of the reasons I hate, loathe, and despise religion, all religions. So
get the words right out of my mouth.
All right. Well, Ash, I'm glad you called in. Thanks for checking in. I hope things work out with Iran. I've never been to your country. I've seen pictures. It looks beautiful. But, of course, so did Vietnam look beautiful. You know what I'm saying? All right, we're going to take a break. You can tell by the music. We'll be back after that break. We have a little more to talk about Pelosi's trip to Syria. And not too much more. Then we're going to do some phone calls. Also, I've gotten a couple of emails here about Sarge over at unreportednews.net. I'm not sure what's going on, but we're going to try to figure it out. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Email here from Angie. Hi, Mike. I saw Bush on C-SPAN today griping about how Congress was gone for the holiday already. As soon as I heard that, I knew he was going to do what he always does when Congress leaves. Assign a handpicked Republican slime ball to a position somewhere that he knows would have a snowball's chance in hell to get that post if Congress had any say over it. It didn't surprise me in the least to hear you talk about the newest scuzzy ambassador today. As far as Pelosi going on her mission, don't forget, she can't go over there without knowledge and approval and interface with the Bush people. I wouldn't be so fast to see this as much more than part of the game show. I'm sorry for sounding so cynical, but this is a pattern of promoting Pelosi that makes me feel it's just part of distracting us and making us think the Democrats are making progress when it's all part of a coordinated effort to keep us at the end of a leash. They jerk around our emotions and hopes and make us buy into a process that's rigged to the last dot. I mean, really, what have they done for us lately? Anything? I don't know if it was aired in the mainstream news, but the Mosaic News yesterday showed Pelosi and Israel giving an address and saying that Iran poses a very serious threat to the world. Oh, really? How so? Why are there never facts or details to back up the assertions spewing out of the mouths of our elected officials? They just say things as pronouncements, but don't explain their positions. I can't respect that. Angie. Okay. You just can't win. Absolutely just can't win. But that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. One thing that is kind of entertaining in a very weird sort of way is the Republicans on the blogs who are going out of their minds because Pelosi wore a headscarf. As she's touring around, or when she went into a church. Now, of course, Catholic women wear headscarves, and when Condoleezza Rice was in in Kyrgyzstan and Afghanistan and Kazakhstan and Tajikistan. When she went into a mosque, she wore a headscarf. There's a picture of her at mahablog.com, a picture of rice. Orthodox Jewish women wear head coverings. Catholic women wear head coverings, traditional Catholic women. But the right winger is just going absolutely bat squeeze bleeping crazy because Nancy Pelosi wore a headscarf. Pelosi in a hijab, they shrink. Oh, my God. Right-wingers are subhuman. They literally are subhuman. Oh, well. Oh, well. All right, where are we? I don't know about the cynicism about Pelosi. You know, I read Angie's email for you, but... If you know, I've said it before, there's very little difference between the Democrats and Republicans, and I mean that from an institutional point of view. I mean that from a leadership point of view. But is there not anybody in the Democratic Party that any mainstream Democrat trusts anymore? I mean, there are a bunch that I do, and not necessarily trust them 100%. But when an effort is made, am I being fooled? Is everybody being fooled when Pelosi is over there? And the Syrians reveal that they were asked to help with the negotiations to free the Brits, and the Brits are freed, and Pelosi's there, and Bush won't talk to anybody, and the killing goes on all over the Middle East, and nobody's talking to anybody, and everybody hates everybody, and Pelosi goes over, and amazingly, something happens. Am I just some kind of a damn fool because I look at that as just a little bit positively? Am I? Is she really just part of the scam, the game? I mean, is Al Gore just a lying son of a bitch who's just trying to figure out a way to make money off his film? I mean, is there nobody in the Democrat? And I'm not trying to be a smartass with you, Angie. I really am not. I'm not trying to, you know, get really, really weird here. But isn't there anybody that any of us Democrats trust? Is there no? How about John Edwards? You know, I've heard some Democrats really get all over. The Edwards family for the revelation of Mrs. Edwards' cancer back and in her bones. And I just think to myself, Jesus Christ, is there nobody, nowhere, no Democrat who can do anything, say anything, be anything without just tons of cynical crap being poured on them? Huh? I know I'm just as guilty. I mean, I'm not, I'm certainly not trying to bust your chops here, Angie, because I've been just as guilty. But I do stop and think sometimes. Is there nothing that any Democrat can do ever that the rest of the Democrats can't just sit back and say, "Hey, good show." Anything ever? All right, here's Sarge, and I said earlier tonight that I've gotten a couple of emails from folks who have been telling me Sarge is in some kind of, what happened? Did you take a shot at Haley Barbour and missed?
Well, I wish I was so lucky.
Yeah.
No, what's
going on, Sarge?
I'm having a lot of trouble, Mike. Suddenly, without fanfare, they cut part of my income. My SSI check got cut. No advance notice or anything, and I found myself with only $50 of that amount coming in. Then I got a notice yesterday.
Wait a minute. Why did they cut your your SSI?
It's a weird story. I really don't even understand it. There's something about the woman that I take care of has been in a nursing home, and because she's not living here, they overpaid me, even though her bills still have to be paid, and I was paying them out of my own pocket to pay her bills. And so all of a sudden they're overpaying me, and I said, well, look, I'm paying her bills. I mean, what happens there? Well, she doesn't live there. She's in a nursing home, so... you know, that didn't count. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me? And I wouldn't have paid her bills, you know. But they said, well, you can challenge this. And I said, yeah, I intend to do so. Well, they cut my check the next week, but without even so much as a howdy-do or we're going to cut your check. And so then yesterday I got a letter from the city, and they delivered it via police telling me that my yard has to be mowed. Well, I don't own this house. The house, it belongs to the woman and her brothers. One brother lives in Texas. The other brother lives here. They gave me 10 days to get the house cleaned, the yard cleaned up and cut. And
Sarge, where's your house?
I don't have one. I live with this woman. I take care of her. She's
right.
Mentally retarded, and I watch over her and take care of her.
Now, the police came out, or city inspectors? Or?
Yeah, the police brought a letter from the city, and I had already 2 weeks before talked to the mayor and told him about the situation and that I wanted him to see if – I wanted to see if he would go tell the owner of the property that they needed to come out and mow this yard, because it is bad. And neighbors here, they're not going to help. They know I'm disabled, but they don't want to do anything for me. They won't even take me to the store, you know, and knowing I can't get around, I can't drive, but they won't even take me to the store. I have to pay someone $60 a shot to take me to the store 2 miles away.
Why?
That's the only one I can find that'll do it, and that's the only price they'll do it for. And
good God, what the hell is going on? I thought
it's harassment, Mike. It's harassment. I've gone through a lot of this before. Some of this is new, but I've gone through a lot of this before. I've even gone so far as to have a sniper outside my door trying to shoot me during the flag referendum. So I'm not unaccustomed to it, but I can see it fast getting to that point where there's going to be another sniper, and I don't have the same dog I had back then. And so it's really a bad situation. I'm in a world of crap, man.
Well, what can your associates and people who are aware of what you've been doing, what can we do? What do you need? Tell me, or just say it on the air here. I'll tell you what, we got to
wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Okay, the last thing I want to do, Mike, is ask anybody to give me anything, but I sure would appreciate the help to get the hell out of here. Because these people, my health is going down. I'm in a hell of a lot of pain. I can't even get my medicine without paying someone $60 to take me to the drugstore. And if they want to help, Ray Dean and Cowgirl have set up a thing at my column at unreportednews.net where they can donate, and it goes to my PayPal account. That's something, if I can get out of here, the sooner the better, that would help. Of course, that's strictly up to anybody who wants to do it. I'm not asking for it. If they want to, that's fine.
All right, Sarge, hold on a second. I got to do a break here. Just stay there.
Okay.
We'll come back and talk a little bit more. We'll try to figure out maybe we can all do something here. I'm not talking about collectively because it's a damn radio show, but I'm talking about individually. You all know Sarge. You know what he's been doing in Mississippi. You know what he's been struggling with for the past year and a half, almost 2 years. So, maybe we can help. I will. I damn sure will. We'll talk to him in a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
No. How do I feel at the end of the day?
Are you sad because you're on your own?
I'm tired, don't even say it no more.
I will help you.
Gonna get down and I'm afraid.
I will help you.
And the goals for this country are a compassionate American
for every single citizen.
Yeah, sure it is. All right, we're talking with Sarge in Mississippi, who has been working diligently for the past almost 2 years to try to bring some solutions to the problems in the Mississippi Gulf Coast area as a result of Katrina, and now it sounds like you've been hit by your own personal hurricane. Sarge, the last time we talked on the program, you said you had met someone. You said, I think your words were, you met someone of a woman of a different race, and you were heading for further north.
Yeah, that's well, I was planning on going up to Cincinnati. And
Cincinnati,
still,
right.
Still am. Of course, this check business really just makes that even worse. Plus, I have a water pipe that's gotten progressively worse since Katrina. It was messed up during Katrina, and now my water bill runs anywhere from $120 to $200 a month. And now I'm stuck paying that all by myself with a reduced check. And that's not to count all the other bills that come in on top of that. And the people that own this house won't fix it. And so it's, you know, it's just like everybody's just trying to make sure that they just keep me just as miserable as they can. And
all right, now what about you said they've cut your SSI? What does that do about your meds?
Well, it makes it harder because I still get my Medicaid, but the biggest problem I have there is just getting to and from the store to get them, to the drugstore to get them, because $60 a ride.
Right.
You know, you have to make sure everything's packed up nice and neat before you take off, you know. So that's part of, you know, that's I can't walk to the store. I've done it, and the last time I had someone actually have to bring me home because I just about collapsed. I fortunately was at the bank, and my trust officer brought me home. But I've been using my trust fund. I have an emergency clause in it that pays for emergency situations, like if my electricity bill is in trouble or something like that. And I've been using it. Of course, it's draining me now. You know, it's starting to cut into my trust fund pretty heavy, and it's getting harder and harder to get help on that. But
well, this trust fund, is it set up? Is that from family or?
Yeah, that's from when my adopted mother. Now that's a whole different story.
Right.
I won't go into it, but it's only like about $40,000.
And you can't get a hold of it until
it's there permanently as long as I live. But I only get a monthly check of like $250.
So you get the interest off the body of the trust.
Right.
Sarge, hold on. I got to do another break. When we come back, we'll try to figure out how people can send you some help. All right? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Six before the hour. All right, we're talking with Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, in the time we've been talking here, I've gotten about six or seven emails that I've forwarded on to you. Sarge@unreportednews.net. I hope that's still your address.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay. Well, a bunch of them, I just forwarded a bunch. Now, here's what I think we ought to do. I think you certainly have a legitimate claim here. You've helped a lot of folks, and it sounds like you need some help. So, I'm just going to put out your mailing address, sarge@unreportednews.net. I got an email here from Australia. They would love to send you $100, but there's no PayPal there. I got another email from New York City, and I sent these all on to you, people who don't want to use PayPal, whether or not you have a mailing address. So here's what I think would work. People will email you directly, sarge@unreportednews.net. And if any come to me, I'll just forward them on to you. And let's see what happens in the next couple, 3 days, and you check back in with me Friday.
Well, I sure appreciate it, Mike. I tell you, don't think this will stop me from doing what I've been doing, though. I'm still speaking out. They won't silence my voice. They're going to have to kill me first.
Well, that's the kind of attitude that makes you who you are. And
you can harass the hell out of me, but you can't shut me up without killing me.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right, Sarge.
Thank you, Mike.
This is Wednesday evening. Let me know Friday evening what has happened in the past 48 hours, okay?
Sure, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right. Don't forget to call back. Thanks, Sarge. I'll talk to you later. All right. You heard the address. It's sarge@unreportednews.net. If you have a question about, and he'll get back to you, if you have a question about how you can help him out, if you want to help him out, email him directly. If you email me, I'll send it on to him. But send to him directly. Just send an email. Ask him what he needs, what you can do, and then figure out some way that works for both of you to do it. And we'll send him something. We'll definitely send him something. He's got PayPal. I'm not PayPal is all right with me. We've used that before. Didn't we use it for Andy Stevenson. The activist with blackboxvoting.org who was hammered by right-wingers. So I don't have any problem with PayPal. Okay. It's 37 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls. Brian is calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Brian, welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I don't know how to follow that up.
That's all right. No. Yeah. Just what, you know, what you wanted to talk about. Sarge,
okay, well, I was going to defend John Kerry, but also talking about the Sarge, to defend that good lad. I'm going back over a past story from CNN, June 11, 2006. An email shows that Bush was glad that FEMA and Michael Brown took the Katrina flak. It shows the September 2005 email reads, it was to Michael Brown, this email. I did hear one reference to you at the cabinet meeting yesterday. I wasn't there, but I heard someone commented that the press was sure beating up on Mike Brown, to which the president replied, I'd rather they beat up on him than me or Chertoff, end quote.
Yeah, right.
And it goes on from there.
Isn't he just a cowardly little bastard? Isn't he? Doesn't he just make just the bile rise up in your gullet?
His father may have been a bit of presidential timber, but this guy never really mathematically earned the office, and he never was a presidential material. He's like a sick, cancerous, corporatist virus on our country that's got to be dealt with. Hopefully, peacefully.
Hey, don't hold back, Brian. Tell me what you really feel about this guy.
Yeah, talk about it, going back to that. This Fox bastard being this again in the night. They sneak it through the being appointed the ambassador to Belgium.
Right.
I went back to our August 20, 2004 story about on John Kerry, New York Times. Friendly Fire: The Birth of an Anti-Kerry Ad by Kate Czernecki and Jim Rutenberg, and it talks about these swift bolt liars, these bastards. The group also offers the account of William J. Schachter, Jr., a retired rear admiral who says in the book that he had been on the small skimmer on which Mr. Kerry was injured that night in December 68. He contends that Mr. Kerry wounded himself while firing a grenade. But the other two men who acknowledged that they had been with Mr. Kerry, and they were the only other two men on the boat, they could count to three, Mr. Zaladonis and Mr. Runyon said they cannot recall the third crew member there. Me and Bill aren't the smartest, but we can count to three, Mr. Runyon said in an interview. And even Dr. Letson said he had not recalled Mr. Schachter until he had a conversation with another veteran earlier this year and received a subsequent phone call from Mr. Schachter himself. Mr. Schachter did not return a telephone call from the New York Times, and a spokesman for the group said he would not comment.
Hey, let me ask you something. Are you related to too much cappuccino, Perino?
I might be, you know, I might have some, you know, I'm mostly Irish, Scots, Welsh, Celtic ancestry, Mike, and a little bit of Jewish ancestry, though, so that goes to the Mediterranean. That could have some of the maybe some good Roman stock in there, right?
Who knows
where any of us are descended from?
I didn't know people in New Hampshire talk that fast. You sound like you got a little Brooklyn in you, too.
I was born in Toms River, New Jersey, yeah.
All right, close enough.
Okay, and the story, just quickly, you know, talking about the Silver Star was awarded after Mr. Carey's boat came under heavy fire from shore during a mission in February 1969. According to the Navy records, he turned the boat to charge the Viet Cong position. An enemy soldier sprang from the shore about 10 feet in front of the boat. Mr. Carey leaped onto the shore, chased the soldier behind a small hut and killed him, seizing a B-40 rocket launcher with a round in the chamber. Swift Boat Veterans for Truth describes the man Mr. Carey killed as a solitary, wounded teenager. But they go back, they interview the villagers that were there at the scene of this battle, and they knew this guy was 26, 27-year-old grown man. They shook their heads and laughed. That there was no way he was a teenager.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I got the story.
And I'm going to do what I can for Sarge.
Okay. We got the story, and the fact that this guy got a recess appointment is just so typically Bush.
Yeah.
But I think most people who appreciated Kerry's candidacy, even people, Democrats who didn't, are fully aware now at this point about what these rat bastards did to Kerry and to other soldiers or Marines that were with him. Listen, thanks a lot, Brian. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right, you take care. Oh, my goodness. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there one day at a time. It was 70 degrees here yesterday, and today it's 29, so, I mean, outside of that. I got a little worried about you yesterday when I heard they were shooting up CNN in Atlanta, and I thought, where the hell did he go?
Oh, you thought maybe I was pulling the trigger?
Well, or ducking behind a chair or doing something.
Well, you know, the horrible part of that is the fact that it was domestic, and I hate the term domestic violence. It sounds like a pet or something you keep
at home.
Yeah,
you know, afterwards, you know, later on they said what it was.
Right,
but
right.
It was when they first started reporting it, it just kind of, you know, I thought, hey.
Yeah.
So, I mean, geez. You know, these greedy bastards that Sarge is dealing with, it reminds me of the bureaucrats, you know, that stand on the shore and somebody's drowning 20 feet off and they throw them a 15-foot rope and they say, well, I met him more than halfway.
Yeah, right.
Jesus, Pete, honest to God, I'm humming.
I
got to be careful or I'll say things
I
don't want to.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, your big fan base out here, I get emails all the time. Where's Marge?
Well, darn, there's so many of your fans anymore that I'm wearing my finger out. I got to start at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. To try and get through, I guess. I don't know.
I
got to start earlier.
Right. Well, that's true. A lot of folks are finding the program, but they all ask about, not all, but a certain percentage says, you know, what happened to Marge?
Well,
you know, because a lot of people have figured out that you're really Helen Thomas. I know we weren't supposed to let that cat out of the bag, but what the hell?
You know, I don't know who the hell his writers were, but when that line popped out from the dinner from last week or whenever the hell that, you know, he was looking for a friendly voice and he called up Helen Thomas, I really roared at that one.
Yeah, I'll bet you did. It must be hell going in there every day, Helen, or Marge. All right, well, what else you got on your mind?
Well, you know, I keep looking at the news today, and all these candidates are raising all this money.
Yeah.
Somebody came up with a figure that for this campaign, the sum total, all the collection of candidates, it's going to be close to $500 million.
Oh, it's vile. It's awful. We don't have democracy.
There's people like Sarge that can't, you know, get the stuff he needs. There's schools that are falling apart because, you know, from lack of repair.
Everything.
All this stuff is going to hell in a handbasket because There's not maintenance made.
But
and
you
yet,
but you understand, Marge, that the way we choose our elected officers now, leaders, especially on the national level, is a matter of marketing. It has nothing whatsoever to do with picking the best person. It has nothing whatsoever to do with picking people who have the best plan for this country. What it has
no
to do
crap.
With is marketing. It's just marketing. That's why they need all the money. Democracy's dead. It's dead.
No crap. And you notice that I cleaned that up.
I noticed you did.
But, I mean, you know, the they're spending this money on TV, mostly. So the cable and the TV stations are happy little clams.
Oh, sure.
You know, waiting for all this money to start coming in.
Yeah, it's going to be just like dollars from heaven.
No, and the thing that happened this last weekend in Chicago with somebody named Sam Zell.
Oh, yeah.
Buying the Chicago Tribune.
I know who he is.
And I nearly fell off my chair. They were talking on PBS the next day that he declares himself a grave walker. Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Help
All right, Marge, hold
what
on.
Was the guy?
Hold on. I got to take a break. Stay right there. We'll come back.
Capable of being wise about the money.
Yeah, wise about the money. Okay, back to Marge. All right, Marge, you started to talk about Sam Zell. You know, Sam Zell is the person who made Clear Channel Radio what it is.
Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Yeah, back in the day when it was called J-Cor Company, Sam Zell bought it. And I believe it was he who changed the name to Clear Channel and then sold it. But, yeah, Zell has had his hands in an awful lot of...
Help me remember the name of the guy. I think he started out with Sunbeam or something. He developed the name of Chainsaw something. What was his name? He would take over a business and...
That was the guy from yeah, I know who you mean, but I'm just like you, sweetheart. I can't remember my own address half the time.
you're getting close to my age, darling.
Probably. I hope I can live as long as you. Are you kidding?
But no, hang it in there. The thing that,
matter of fact, I think you're the oldest person I know.
Oh
no! I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna smack you just because because I feel like it.
Now where were we?
Well, when they were talking about him on PBS the other night, yeah. He was supposedly self-proclaimed a grave walker, and I thought, oh God, he sounds like Chainsaw, whatever his name is.
Right.
And where else would he that? He was going in and talking about, I'll cry, buckets of tears. He bought the Tribune, but he didn't buy the Cubs. And now they're talking about selling the Cubs in one hand and Wrigley Field in another. That would, oh, geez, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen because Wrigley Field is a landmark, and I don't think they can. But, I mean, you know, that... Texas Dodge Cop is a Texas Dodge Cop, and, you know, what can I tell you?
I know. Wrigley Field is Wrigley Field. It's like Yankee Stadium before they ruined it. Like Dodger Stadium before it was...
Fenway Park.
Ebbets Field.
You know, the last two, I think Fenway has got a couple of years on Wrigley, but that's about the... They're the two oldest baseball parks in the country.
Yeah.
But it... But this guy, you know, he's talking about parking his motorcycle in Colonel McCormick's boardroom.
Life gets tougher the older we get, right, Marge?
I tell you, Mike, it gets crazier and crazier, and I wonder about some of these people that are walking around claiming to be human. I seriously doubt it. Yeah. I don't know what the hell species they are, but anyway, it.
All right, Marge.
Well, take care.
All right, don't stay away so long. All right.
Well, okay, I'll.
Because then people start wondering if you're on another one of your secret missions into I don't know Iran someplace to destabilize the government. So stay in touch. All right.
Okay, me and Nancy Pelosi will go over and see what we can do to settle this stupid.
All right, Helen. I mean, Marge. All right. You have a good night. Take care. Lou is calling from Fort Drum, Florida, Fort Drum was in New York. Fort Drum, Florida.
Between Yeehaw Junction and Okeechobee, and I swear to God, it's in the middle of nowhere, sir.
You're on the Tamiami Trail, huh?
No, it's off of 441, but I moved up here about 2 years ago, and it's, you know, I moved from South Florida, you know, Neil Rogers, Randy Rhoads territory.
Right, right.
And I thought, oh, my God, my car is going to get firebombed because you can still see the Carry for President sticker. But you know what?
What?
There are some real inbred people here, but you know what? They're on to the Bush crime family, and I would talk to these people, and I would think, oh, God, I better not say anything about that or, you know, but sure enough, they'd be like, oh, I don't like that piece of crap he is.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this much. I got serious about for Howard Stern, and I would definitely keep it for Howard and you. I mean, it is.
Well, that's
so
good. Now, what did you really call about, though?
Well, I started. I saw on Sarge's site.
Yeah.
About how he needed help, and I was posting that everywhere, and I got kind of worried because I hadn't heard him call you in forever, so.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are getting worried. I was starting to get worried. I got a bunch of emails that said Sarge is in trouble. And like I said, I don't know. Hell, somebody like Sarge, and I mean this with great respect, that could mean he picked up a rifle and decided to even the score. You know, I mean, some of us are right on the brink of doing that.
Oh, I tell you, every day I just think, oh, my God, is this going to be the day I'm going to set up the sniper nest, you know?
Well, like Marge said, when she heard that hell was breaking loose at CNN, she thought for a minute maybe it was me. All right. Well, listen, post Sarge's website as far and as wide as you can, Lou, okay?
And one more thing.
Yeah.
Can I at least get a toaster oven for my Dana Bana Bobana Banana Bana entry? Because I made number four, and I...
You almost won.
Damn it.
You almost won. And I'll tell you, the only reason you didn't... Well, not the only reason. I really do think too much Cappuccino Perino legitimately. But one of the reasons you didn't win is because it was so damn long.
I'm sorry.
But no, but it was a good one. It's a good one. I'll tell you what. We may just occasionally use numbers 2, 3, and 4. Just drop it in once in a while.
And how come it is that Hillary Clinton made $10 million per war chest was... She brought that back over into her current $36 million.
Uh-huh.
Well, Hillary, I have an idea for you. Why not donate that to somebody like Sarge? I'm sorry.
Woo-hoo! Well, man, is that a knee slapper there, Lou?
Well, I try, you know.
These are politicians, boy. They got to buy their way into this presidential contest.
Yeah,
all right,
thank
listen.
God it doesn't involve actual issues and now who'd be the best president.
That's true. Lou, stay in touch. We don't
I
have
love
many
you in a non Yoo-hoo way.
We don't have many callers from Fort Drum, so for God's sake, stay in touch. All right, Lou.
Oh, you got it. 10-4. Love you.
See you later. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Got an email here from one of our correspondents. It's from the Times Online, the Times of the UK, timesonline.co.uk. Lorry bomb, that's a truck bomb, kills children in school, it says. It goes on to say, a newborn baby was one of at least 14 children and adults killed when a suicide bomber detonated a lorry laden with explosives close to a primary school in the northern Iraqi city of Kirkuk yesterday. The latest massacre of Iraqi children came as 21 Shia market workers were ambushed, bound, and shot dead north of the capital. Those victims came from the Baghdad market visited the previous day by John McCain, the U.S. presidential candidate, who said that an American security plan in the capital was starting to show signs of progress. Now, didn't we read something the other night from, it was from the New York Times, where one of the market owners, one of the stall owners in this market, had said that he was terrified now. He would only use his nickname because he was afraid that once the McCain entourage left, because he had called attention to this, that the insurgents would come in, or the murderers. To me, they're just murderers. They're just freaking killers. That they would come in and kill people. And sure enough, the victims were they were taken out and executed. The Kirkuk bloodshed erupted when a bomber driving a truck full of explosives hidden by sacks of flour targeted Iraqi police station. The full force of the blast hit a nearby primary school. Buthaina Mahmoud, 10 years old, was horrified to see the bodies of her classmates strewn on the ground in flames. She said, "Everyone I saw was wearing the blue school uniform drenched with blood. Some of their dresses were torn. I only saw fire. I heard teachers and students shouting. When we rushed out of the school, we saw pupils on the ground, some of them burning," she said. Naz Omar, a girl in the fifth form, said, quote, "We were at the last lessons when we heard the explosion. I saw two of my classmates sitting near the window. They fell on the floor, drenched in blood. They could not speak. I was terrified. I said, 'God is great. I need my mother. I need my father.'" Terrorists in Iraq have frequently killed large numbers of children, either while aiming at nearby American or Iraqi security forces or as an end in itself, as well as the killings of the children and the Shia market vendors. Four people were blown up by another suicide bomber at a police checkpoint in Baghdad, while a roadside bomb killed four civilians in a Shia town just north of Baghdad. Very seldom do you hear these reports. More than 600 Iraqis have been killed in the past week, despite a U.S.-Iraq security plan to quell violence in the capital. McCain said that the situation was showing signs of improvement and blamed waning support in the United States for the war on the media, which were portraying an overly negative image of the crisis. Times Online, a couple of responses. Here's one from Nicholas Town in New York City, who writes, "Would it make any more sense if the massacres were among people of differing religions? You seem to be in denial that none of this would be happening if not for the outrageous lies told by the U.S. and the U.K. before they launched an illegal, aggressive invasion for the purpose of destroying the Iraqi nation and seizing control of its resources. They bombed the infrastructure, destroyed the culture, poisoned the countryside, killed hundreds of thousands, tortured and humiliated them, armed the competing militias, set up a puppet regime, organized the death squads, and then when the Iraqis start killing each other, you can pretend you and your taxes had nothing to do with it. You can call them animals, pretend your government wants to keep the peace, blame it all on their religion. McCain visited that marketplace to declare how great things were going, how it was safe, and the vendors there said he was endangering them. They would pay the price. This blood is also on his hands. A response to the Times Online, the Times of the UK, from an American reader. McCain is just absolutely insane. He's mad. He's totally insane. And the little tricked out chihuahua that went with him, what's his name? Michael Pence from Indiana, who said his stroll through this very same market where 21 people were kidnapped and butchered after his stroll, that he said the stroll through the market was not unlike strolling through a market in a small town in or Indianapolis in Indiana. What is with these people? I feel so different from these kinds of people. It's almost like, I don't know, comparing myself to a Neanderthal, a species that doesn't exist anymore. It just seems so, they seem so different. They're everything they say is a lie. Every single, how can they lie about politics and not lie to their spouses and their children and their priests or their rabbis or their ministers or whomever they go to try to cleanse their filthy souls? How do you lie politically, publicly, and tell the truth privately? How do you do that? I maintain you can't. If you're a liar, if you're a sneak, if you're a cheat, if you're a fraud, you are that. You are not a part-time liar, a part-time sneak. Well, I know that's harsh. That almost sounds like it comes out of Leviticus or something. But by God, I believe that. A liar is a liar is a liar. How can these people face their families? How can John McCain face his wife, who rumors have it now is having a fling with a younger man? Don't blame you. Don't blame you, Mrs. McCain. You're married to a mad freak. But Michael Pence, I bet he goes to church on Sunday. Pence, what is that, a Protestant name? Yeah, I think it is. Ah, oh, might be Catholic. I bet he goes to church. I bet he sings the hymns. I bet his pious ass stands there on Sundays and tosses a $10 bill into the collection plate when he has when the Spirit moves him. And this freak can go to Iraq surrounded by a company of heavily armed soldiers, helicopter gunships, snipers, bulletproof vests, all kinds of weaponry, and tell the constituents back, oh, this is like a walk through Indianapolis. You evil son of a bitch. You really are, Michael Pence. You are just an evil freak. And McCain, I'll tell you, you left a big chunk of your mind or your brain or both in that prison camp in Hanoi, didn't you? Not that I'm not trying to make it sound like your 6 years there was a vacation. It wasn't. It was hell. But, buddy, you ought to be in treatment, not running for president of the United States. You're out of your freaking mind.
Well, you know, it's been a long time
Hi.
It's been a long time since we've been through the Midwest. I mean, maybe, I don't know, Indianapolis is, you know, it's fallen to a crime wave or a nuclear holocaust or some sort of harm. Maybe it's been firebombed and we just don't know it. Maybe there's a civil war going on. Snipers, insurgents, dying, mutilated children. I don't know. It could be.
I don't know. Simon, one of our UK correspondents, says, I'll tell you what he says when we come back. He sent me an email. How in the hell does he listen to this program every night? What is it? Seven in the six? I guess it's about six in the morning now. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Daryl at democracyinteractive.com just sent me an email, and didn't cross my mind. 40 years ago tonight, Martin Luther King Jr. was killed in Memphis. Thanks, Daryl, for the reminder, because I sure as hell didn't see anything anywhere today. Did you, Kathy? You did? You didn't? This comes from Simon in the UK. And it is from thinkprogress.org. It's a flashback. Thank God Al Gore invented the internet, huh? Danny Hastert went around telling foreign leaders not to listen to Clinton, who was president at the time. All this just snotty clouded dust that has been raised by these Republican thugs, either in Congress or media, or they're just such squirmy maggots. They really are. But the internet, you see, unlike television, the internet has memory that is permanent. Television is designed to make you forget. The internet is designed to make you remember. That's why right-wingers hate it. But here's the thing from Think Progress. Apparently, in 1997, when there was a push in Washington to put human rights conditions on the aid sent to Colombia for the drug war every year, the future speaker, Dennis Hastert, led a Republican delegation urging Colombian officials to bypass Clinton and go direct to Congress. Really? Hastert even went so far as to instruct the staff of the House Foreign Affairs Committee to make deals with the Colombians unilaterally, cutting out the embassy staff in Bogota. And then Simon adds, and the flying monkeys have the nerve to say, Madam Speaker is undermining U.S. policy. Come to think of it, when the policy consists of starting holy wars across the Middle East, then damn straight, it should be undermined. As far as Pelosi, the Associated Press reporter Lovin asked Bush at the press release if Pelosi's Syria trip was preempting diplomacy. No mention of the Republican visit, of course. The Republican members of Congress visit. That would be AP staff writer Jennifer Lovin. CNN reported on Pelosi's bad trip to Syria. Let me see what else here. Lou Dobbs. What did Lou Dobbs have to say about it? Dobbs said the speaker, for her part, says the White House is singling her out for criticism over this trip to Syria. Last week, three Republican congressmen also visited Syria, and they also met with President Assad. All right, well, good for you, Lou. Sometimes Lou gets it right. But the point, this is from MediaMatters.org, Pelosi is being treated as though she's interfering with some positive move or some positive activity by this filthy Bush crime family. And the right-wing racists who are screaming because Pelosi wore a headscarf as she went into a mosque, those people are beneath, I don't know. I feel sometimes that I'm sharing the planet with people who are a species that looks human, but it's not. And they're Republicans in this country. They are Republicans. or the conservatives. All right, back to your calls. Anthony is calling from. Anthony is calling from San Francisco, but we got to take a break, so we'll come back and get Anthony on the other side of the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
And I'm feeling the strain. All is shame. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul.
26 before the hour, Paul Abrams writing at either Huffington Post or Daily Coast. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. He says, Sunday I'll meet the press, Charles Rangel. Stated that Iraq war supporters to whom he has spoken would all vote no on the war if their children could be drafted. Yesterday, Dan Bartlett, White House Communications Director, and Dana Perino, Press Secretary, attacked Matt Dowd's conversion, claiming, as Dowd had said, that it was his own son's deployment to Iraq that triggered his enlightenment. Both Bartlett and Perino volunteered that having a son deploy in Iraq would certainly affect someone's view of the war. Bartlett and Perino are both of military age. What about the press asking each of them, A, if they personally support the president's Iraq war policies, and B, if so, why have they not volunteered? And what about asking the White House for a list of administration children between 17 and 40 and a list of those who have volunteered for Iraq? What about asking Bush if his views would change if his daughters could be sent to Iraq? If he says no, then ask him why they have not volunteered. In the spring of 2004, I had the opportunity of asking Jeb Bush toe-to-toe whether any of his children would be volunteering for Iraq. He said, no, I don't believe they will. When I asked why not, he provided a lame excuse and then became visibly red-faced and enraged. Radical right-winger Bill Kristol first lied about his age to a Seattle audience, claiming he was too young to have served in Vietnam, and then, matching the Bush red face, angrily shouted, why should I? Why should I? When he was outed. He said his son was in ROTC at Harvard. ROTC at Harvard. No mention of his older children who were out of college volunteering. Consider how sick, pathetic, cowardly, and perverted the people to whom Rangel referred, mostly members of Congress, one assumes from his context, how perverted they must be. Proclaiming the fall of civilization if we withdraw from Iraq in one breath, yet willing only to send other people's children to continue the fight, and accusing those who realize the futility of further military action by limiting the president's authority to pursue an open-ended, unaccountable war policy of not supporting the troops. How did our society create such people? Why are they allowed to escape this basic question? Why are they not exposed by the press? Are the honorable so honorable that they will not challenge the dishonorable? Ask Adam Putnam, a 30-ish member of the House Republican leadership, why he himself is not volunteering for Iraq. Remember, he tells his constituents that the future of civilization is at stake, and when the military is exhausted, new volunteers are highly desirable. Everyone knows this. Consider the arrogance of the White House accusing Matt Dowd of changing his views because his son was about to be deployed. Why doesn't the so-called White House press corps ask the White House for a list of administration children between 17 and 40 and for an accounting of those deployed to Iraq? I learned last night of a National Guardsman who served two tours of duty in Afghanistan, thought he was finished, and now is going to be redeployed to Iraq. Someone who supported the Afghanistan venture, but is vehemently opposed to Iraq. Because the Bartlett's and Perino's and Putnam's and others who question the patriotism of war opponents do not volunteer themselves, other people's children have to bear the burden of their misguided, unaccountable policies. If they want to support the troops, let's see them volunteer or shut up. Woo, you go, Paul Abrams. I hate these people. Oh, my God, I hate these people. I just absolutely, absolutely hate them. Okay, that's nobody gives a damn who I hate. Oh, one last thing here. Amnesty International, the conditions at Guantanamo are worsening, deteriorating. The majority of the people held there, according to Amnesty International, are held in solitary confinement. AI said the often harsh and inhumane conditions at the camp were, quote, pushing people to the edge, end quote. It called for the facility to be closed and for plans for, quote, unfair military commission trials to be abandoned. Many of the 385 inmates have been held for 5 years or more, unable to mount a legal challenge to their detention. Some inmates, according to Kate Allen, who is the UK director of Amnesty International, said some inmates are dangerously close to full-blown mental and physical breakdown. The report published a couple of days ago, Thursday, said that about 300 detainees are now being held at a new facility known as Camp 5, Camp 6, and Camp Echo, comparable to Supermax high security units in the U.S. The group said the facility had, quote, created even harsher and apparently more permanent conditions of extreme isolation and sensory deprivation, end quote. The detainees were reportedly confined to windowless cells for 22 hours a day, only allowed to exercise at night, and could go for days without seeing daylight. Amnesty's UK director Kay Allen described the process at Guantanamo as, quote, a travesty of justice, end quote. She said, with many prisoners already in despair at being held in indefinite detention, some are dangerously close to full-blown mental and physical breakdown. The U.S. authorities, she said, should immediately stop pushing people to the edge with extreme isolation techniques and allow proper access for independent medical experts and human rights groups. End quote. Oh, my God. That's from the BBC. It's just unbelievable. What kind of people are these? The people in the Bush crime family. Who set these policies? Permanent detention, not charged with anything, not accused of anything, except being labeled an enemy combatant. Who's next? Are you next? Am I next? I'll tell you what. I know I've said this before, and I know it doesn't amount to a pile of spit. But if these types came for me, I swear to God, there would be a blaze of gunfire. I swear to God, I would open fire. There is just no doubt. And yeah, my ass would be shot dead, and that's the way it goes, and somebody else could raise Molly unless they killed her too, and Kathy unless they killed her too. But this is an outrage. This is astonishing. This should not be happening by a government of the United States. It should not be happening. These arrogant pigs, they don't care. They don't care. They continue to do. The American people said, we want out of Iraq. This bastard Bush escalates the war. It's just, it's insane. And I don't have a frame within which I can handle that reasonably and logically. I don't know how it sounds when I say I would open fire if I knew these pigs were coming for me. That must sound incredibly insane. Okay. But that's, you know, that's a gut feeling. I despise this British crime family as much as I despise any of the apparatus that existed when Hitler was in power, or Stalin. The arrogance, the murderous arrogance of these people, the absolute refusal to exist within a framework of law and justice. They just give their middle finger to the Constitution, to the American people, to human rights, to dignity, to justice, to law, to truth, all of it. They account to no one. Who, where, when, how will these pigs be held accountable? How? By whom? Where? When? And they just continue. It doesn't make any difference. And I'll tell you what, almost more than the Bush crime family that I loathe with a depth that I just didn't know I was capable of. Perhaps more than that loathing for them is what I feel for the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the Savages and the Hugh Hewitts and the rest of these, what's that punk in New York, Malberg or whatever his name is on WABC, all of these vermin, this scum who perpetuate this, who don't give a goddamn about America or about the people here or the Constitution, nothing. They don't care about anything. It's a game. So, conditions at Guantanamo are deteriorating. Jesus, God. About 10 before the hour. Have you all been to the website yet? DefendRosie.com. DefendRosie.com, R-O-S-I-E. Have you been there yet? Rosie O'Donnell, do you know what's been going on? Well, if you don't, check it out. DefendRosie.com. I'll tell you, this country is breaking into little pieces, isn't it? Huh? Oh, gosh. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program at KPHX in Phoenix tonight. Also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. And Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And also, don't forget the gig on the 15th out in Phoenix. The Nova M first birthday bash. It's Sunday, April the 15th. If you live anywhere near Phoenix, even if you don't, hell, if you live in New York, come on out. You can meet me, Jeff Farias, Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, the professor, Marianne Gilligan, the skipper. I said that the other night, didn't I? That's getting old. It's funny the first time, Kathy. The second or twelfth time, it's just not funny. Go to Novam Radio for tickets. I'm assuming there are some left. Or you can drop by the radio station in Phoenix. It's at 824 Washington Street. Entertainment, what does it say here? Music, entertainment, drinks, birthday cake, and it's all at Axis Radius in Scottsdale. 4 p.m., Sunday the 15th. I've not been to Scottsdale. I can't wait. Isn't that full of rich people? Isn't Scottsdale all rich people? They have a lot of spas there, too. Drug rehab centers. Is that where Rush went? Was it Scottsdale, Arizona? Who cares? Bill is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. Just wanted to bring it back around to Sarge.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to meet Sarge. I was part of the group that went from Phoenix to Mississippi on the Mississippi mission thing.
Bless your heart.
And, well, thank you. Anyway, I met Sarge. I just wanted everybody to know that his story, he is a genuine person. I don't think I've ever met anybody with a larger heart, and I was just so impressed with him and his... I've never met anybody that just had such caring of everybody that he came across.
Now, you're one of the people from the KPHX listening audience that took the trucks down there with the material y'all had collected?
Yeah, that's correct. Sean drove one truck, I drove the other, and
right.
Karen and Norma were with us.
Well, I'm really, really upset to hear Sarge talk like that and sound like that, because I know a little bit about him. I know he's gone through some real hell. He's if I've got this right, he's a combat veteran. He's been working to help people down there. He's put a lot of things in his own life on hold. It's just astonishing. I'm surprised, and I mean this in a kind of a weird way, but I'm surprised he hasn't cracked prior to this. Not that he's cracking now, but he sounds like a man who just desperately is hurting.
No, I totally agree. I mean, it's one thing, you know, I'm in an okay position.
Right.
So for me to give a little is like, oh, okay, so I took a week out of my life, big deal. Sarge has given his life. I mean, he has nothing of his own. Whatever he has, he gives.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, if he needs the help, I hope everybody does help him, because he's that type of person. He, you know, when you have nothing and you still give, that's a true character.
It is indeed. And I also get the feeling, I've never met Sarge like you have, but I've talked to him many times going back over the past almost 2 years. But I've always gotten the feeling that he was... you know, he was strong and able to withstand damn near anything. So to hear him start to crack like that, it's very, very, very upsetting. I just hope that the listening audience who's been familiar with what he's been trying to do and the struggle he's been in will respond. I know Kathy and I will. We'll use the damn PayPal button. I know a lot of people are freaked about that, but I don't care, and we'll do it first thing in the morning. We will help this man out. So... I just hope that those who can will, those who can't help him out financially will send him positive energy or however you do that. I mean, a lot of people will pray for him or will keep him in their thoughts. Well, you know, whatever works for the individual. I just hope people will do that, because he seems like just a very decent man. Like you say, someone who gives and gives and gives. And there's a limit. I don't care. You know, we're not all Mother Teresa's. We're not all... able to just give from an endless source, and eventually the source dries up, and if we keep giving, we're going to crack. And I would just hate to think that that's happening with Sarge. So I hope people respond, Bill. I really do.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm glad you're putting out the word.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
All right. I hate that. Who was it? Was it Claire Booth Luce, of all people, who said no good deed goes unpunished? And sometimes the punishment is extreme for people who try to do something decent. Chris is calling from Dublin, California. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. That's kind of a tough call to follow.
I know, but I'm glad Bill called in, because you know, testimonials are good things. But that's all right. That's all right. What you got on your mind?
I've called a bunch of times. You know, you sit here and wait. Oh, I want to get on the show. I want to get on the show. Then I'm like, oh God, please don't pick me next, because I'm at the room. That's a bummer.
I know.
But hey, maybe I can lighten it up.
Well, good luck. We're almost out of time anyway.
Right.
I think we got about 10 seconds.
Okay. Hey, all right, well, then, new theme song for the White House.
Yeah.
Warren Zevon, Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Oh, that's good. I like that. I like that.
And can I get one more thing?
Yeah, we play that. You know, Kathy plays that.
You play the punchline? Can you play? Can you get it out on the air, or does it get beeped?
Well, no, we can't do the S word, but, you know, but... Hey, listen, Chris, I got to go. Call me.
All right, have a good night.
Call me again, and I'll put you on before, you know, we got 40 seconds left. Yeah, I watched Warren Zevon on, what's his name, Late Night with David Letterman, and just about lost it. Oh, my God. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.